What's up, Open Floor Globe? I'm your host, Michael the Pod Pina, and I'm joined on the other line by my good friend, Sports Illustrated staff writer Rohan Nadkarni. Rohan, how was your weekend, good sir?
Mike, it was good. I flew home for the holiday this week, so I'm in Coral Springs, Florida, where I grew up. It's incredibly humid. Have I gone on my coffee shop rant on this show before?
You've gone on a few, but I don't know if this iteration is new, so why don't you hit us with it right now?
So I'm trying very hard not to be a coastal elitist. As someone who's lived in New York and Los Angeles, it's an uphill battle that I fight every day. It's my personal challenge. We are all tested in different ways.
Sure.
And I'm trying to be self-aware. I'm trying to remember where I came from. But, you know, I'm just trying to get a cold brew every day, Mike. And it's ridiculous. Like, people here can't believe it when I don't want a flavor in my coffee. The other day I ordered an iced latte and the one was like, so just the coffee and the milk? And I was like, yeah, I go to this other coffee shop and I order a cold brew and they're like, just so you know, that's our most caffeinated drink. And I'm like, that's the point. They're still charging me a dollar for oat milk. They're still like the upcharge on a splash of oat milk in Coral Springs is ridiculous. It's still just a buck for like an ounce of cold milk. Like, what are we doing here? I need the coffee shops in Broward County to get into the 21st century, please.
The price hike for oat milk is one of my great pet peeves in life. Because I'm an oat milk person. I got to have it. It's necessary.
Also, I tweeted about this, but God forbid you want to order sushi in the suburb. And it's like, they can't help themselves when they're coming up with the menu. They have to name it the wildest stuff. Like the wildest... Like, I don't need, like, a dancing naked girl roll. Like, whatever happened to spicy tuna?
No, you make some great points. This should be, honestly, broken out into a new episode at some point.
It's going to be my mayoral platform.
Because I have the same exact pet peeves. Yes, and you will definitely win.
Can I confront you about something that I learned about you earlier today?
Oh, my God. Sure.
You've never seen the classic animated film Balto? You were like, I don't even like animated movies because you were like, I don't watch animated movies. I felt like this is a rite of passage that every kid goes through is seeing this movie about the heroic dog Balto who delivers that medicine to that sick little girl. And I just can't believe you've never seen it.
I grew up on Goodfellas, homie. Oh, what you know God. About that? I know. Just because us mentioning this, we're going to get about 45 emails about it.
I want to know the Balto emails. I hope we get an email from Balto himself, that wily dog.
Okay. We are officially off the rails, and I have a cold. I don't know if I'm coming across great, but I probably sound funny to our listeners, and that is why. On today's show, which I'm very much looking forward to, we'll be opening up the mailbag to talk about LeBron James. Have you heard of him? Luke Walton's dismissal from Sacramento, a little Celtics, and some more stuff. But first, a quick reminder to everyone out there to please keep the emails coming, openfloormail@gmail.com. That's openfloormail@gmail.com. All right, Rohan. So, full disclosure, I sent you an outline for today's show. It was either Sunday morning or Saturday night, I can't remember.
It was Sunday morning.
Okay, it was Sunday morning. And in it, our main topic for today's show was going to be LeBron James.
LeBron James,
just how he looks, how much he's declining, if at all, and just what that means for the Los Angeles Lakers, and if he isn't a top tier superstar anymore this season, just what's the fallout of that? What's the aftermath? What are we talking about here? Because he's looked up and down, I would say, since returning from injury, and the injury is also its own sort of dilemma here for LA that they're trying to figure out, and they were blown out by the Boston Celtics in Boston on Friday night, and he didn't look great in that one, even though it was his first game back from the abdominal strain.
He snuck in here. I thought he looked pretty good for first game off of an injury.
It's a critical point. We have to include it. But as everyone listening now knows, obviously on Sunday night in Detroit, during another frustrating Lakers performance against the Pistons, LeBron was ejected for punching / elbowing Isaiah Beef Stew Stewart in the face. And Isaiah, his response was one of the most legendary. I'm not condoning it at all, but
I'm not it was condoning a legendary, it, but I enjoyed it. But I enjoyed it.
It was a legendary response. We're glad no one got seriously hurt besides Isaiah Stewart's I guess. There was a lot of blood.
Yes.
There was a lot of anger, I'm sure.
I'm not condoning some of the things Rick Ross says in his music, but I'm listening to it, okay? Listen, Isaiah Stewart's commitment to the guys, I'm cool. It's fine. I'm cool. And then running back over was incredible.
It
yes,
was it was like cartoonish.
Let me put it this way. But you don't see that every day. You don't see that every day.
So before we get into the LeBron discussion that you and I were planning to have, we have to address the scene at Little Caesars yes. Arena even more than we just did. And so I'm going to let you take you this could, wherever you want. You could say
Isaiah Stewart was hot and ready. You know what I mean?
Yes, exactly.
It's a little Caesars joke for you. What's your question, Mike?
My question is, I just want you to take this wherever you want to go. Like, what was your reaction when you first saw this? Did you see it on Twitter first, like me, like an idiot? Or
yes.
Were you watching live? Just like, the TikTok of what happened for you.
I was not watching Lakers Pistons live. I had very little interest in that game. And I was surprised. I mean, I was following along on Twitter. I was certainly surprised to see that the Pistons were keeping it close, having a lead. For most of the night while LeBron was even playing. Then obviously I see all the tweets, etc., and I start watching, and it was actually a pretty exciting finish to that game. As far as the actual, you know, fracas, the dust-up, the rumble, I think it's pretty clear LeBron, I don't think he wanted to hit the guy in the face. I think he wanted to give him a little bit more than just a box out. You know what I mean? I think that there's no secret. I think LeBron would even admit that he wanted to, he was getting a little annoyed. He wanted to get Beef Stew off his back a little bit. I don't think he really wanted to punch him in the face.
Can I just say something though?
Sure.
There has been a lot of defending LeBron, rightfully so, based on 17 years of just him being this role model on and off the court, and there's only been one ejection for him in his career previously, and it was for arguing a call, I believe, in 2017 or 2018 when he was with the Cavs. And Anthony Davis said after the game, he isn't a dirty player, and I agree with that for sure. But, like, sometimes when you see something, just, like, you got to call it like it is here.
Listen, he took a shot. I'm just saying I don't think his intent was to punch him in the face. I do think his intent was to give him something extra, is what I'm saying. I think he was, like, willing to get a flagrant foul because he was like, enough of this, you know? And he wanted to give him a get off me. He didn't want to give him a box out. I just think he genuinely didn't mean to punch him in the face because I think he immediately was like, oh, no, I punched this guy in the face. Let me apologize for that.
So I am interested because I read the New York Times had a game story type of write-up on this situation, which I thought was very interesting.
All the news is fit to print, you know.
Exactly. Yeah. And they describe LeBron's action after he hits Isaiah Stewart in the face as he looks like he's going over to gesture to lend a hand of apology, basically. And clearly, but Isaiah Stewart was upset to a degree that makes me feel like I don't think what do you think Isaiah Stewart was responding to, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. Like, LeBron say something? Did Russell Westbrook say something? What was, like, how he was hot. Like, I have not seen someone that hot on a basketball court in a very long time.
I don't want to speculate, and maybe we'll find out. I mean, a lot of people, when they taste their own blood or you feel that blood coming down your face, or maybe he just felt like, who knows what kind of back and forth they'd been having all night, and he just was fed up. I have a hard time believing LeBron doubled down after hitting him in the face. I have a hard time believing him or Russ or someone like that kind of doubled down and said something. But who knows? I don't want to speculate on that aspect of it, but I mean, it was a crazy scene. There's no question. It was a pretty intense moment. And for all the people who said NBA players don't want to fight, Isaiah Stewart wanted to fight. You know who else was ready to fight? Russell Westbrook, who squared up.
So Russell Westbrook was assessed a technical foul. LeBron and Isaiah Stewart were obviously ejected. Russell Westbrook did not know that he was assessed a technical foul until a reporter asked him a question about it after the game, which was high comedy.
Legendary,
and very enjoyable. I guess I don't really know what else there is to say about this. Mm-hmm. Like, it was, they play again on Sunday. I was looking at the schedule and I'm like, oh my God, that is juicy. Like, yeah.
The night before the Heat Nuggets rematch.
Sure. Is Markieff Morris even healthy? What's going on with his
Okay,
neck?
Can I talk about this actually for a quick second?
Okay, sure. The floor is yours.
I don't want to derail this, but I think there was a lot of talk after that incident that Jokic was provoked and, you know, oh, it was two wrongs and a cheap shot. Like, Morris had it coming after the cheap shot he took, etc. I didn't want to wade into this on Twitter just because it was so annoying how I felt like everyone, you know, you had Nuggets fans and then you had Heat fans and then you had all this stuff and you have people who think Jimmy Butler is a fake tough guy or, you know, and everyone's kind of just have competing interests and coming up with their own narrative. Like, Markieff Morris has missed every game since then with a neck injury, with whiplash. And I don't know. It just, to me, it's like a reminder that, like, what Jokic did was really dangerous. And I've seen people be like, Jokic is lucky he didn't get hurt on that Morris bump, you know? Or Morris could have knocked his knee. Like, Markieff Morris did get hurt. Nikola Jokic, how could you say his intent was anything but to hurt him the way he, the shot he took at him? So I love Jokic. You know this. I picked him to win MVP earlier this week. Like, I talk about the Nuggets all the time. I pick them to win the finals every year. Like, I love them. I love that team. I have nothing against them. I only want to see success for that franchise. But yeah, I think it's because, like, maybe people don't like Markieff Morris. There's not a lot of sympathy for him. But I don't know. The fact that the guy's missed every game since then, to me, it's kind of crazy how that just kind of storyline went away, and it felt like people just wanted it to happen to Morris, frankly, and it's been it's unfortunate.
Yeah, it was kind of a punk move by Morris, and then a double punk, really terrible, dangerous move by Jokic, and he was suspended for it. So That's my take on that. Okay, so let's move on now and kind of have the LeBron discussion that you and I
now. I just want to prep our listeners because you said this, Mike, unprompted, that you had takes that you were ready to bring today, takes that preceded this brawl, takes that preceded the Isaiah Stewart foul, and I just want to make it clear to our listeners, Mike was going to say these things no matter what happened in that Pistons game. He's ready to go. He has LeBron opinions. Let's hear him, Mike.
Well, now I feel like the anticipation is at a level that I can't reach, so thank you for that, Rohan. We're going to start with an email, though, from Brian, and that's how we're going to kick off this conversation, who writes, "Hi, Rohan, Chris, and Michael. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this one."
Do you think he ordered that email in order of how much he likes each host?
I think all of our listeners do that, and that's why you're last every single time.
I think that was okay, a Rohan, so, Chris, and Michael, but okay, continue.
Okay, so Brian writes, "I'd love to hear your thoughts on this one. I'm not trying to have a hot take question, and hopefully my bona fides as a Lakers fan since the mid-1960s will show this. But is LeBron even a top five player in the NBA? I'm not saying he's not, I'm just asking. I'm not sure. Here's the thought experiment I used. I'm allowed to pick any player from this year to lead my team through the regular season and into the playoffs. This isn't a career evaluation nor speculation on who might help me in 3 years. This is what I came up with. Number one was KD, then Giannis, Steph, Jokic, and Luka. So, for me, LeBron is somewhere below those five. The best arguments for LeBron are that he's a proven commodity who's been there many times and has always been so hard to beat in the playoffs. For me, even with that, it would only move him up to fourth best on my list. But there's an offset, health. How sure am I that he'll be there in the end? I'm reasonably sure, but not nearly as sure as I am of Nikola and Luka. Let me know where you guys stand. Okay, so, Brian, thank you so much for that email. Watching, you know, I go back to a piece that I wrote at the very start of this year about LeBron and his energy on the defensive end. And so far this season, you know, LeBron has obviously missed a ton of time with an abdominal strain. He turns 37 years old this season. And his first game back from injury was in Boston on Friday night in a 22-point loss, by the way. In that piece, I wrote about how his defensive energy was just very lacking to start the season. And the numbers when he's on the floor are atrocious. Like, LA's defense is very, very bad. And I think that we knew heading into the season that they were going to struggle. But that's kind of the point here, in that the Lakers need this guy to be, like, absolutely a top five player, I feel, if they want to accomplish what they want to accomplish. Because Anthony Davis is terrific. Russell Westbrook is obviously struggling, and the fit with all these different pieces is very up and down, and they've been hurt and this and that. LeBron is really kind of the key here. And so he becomes this very fascinating variable, in my opinion, to just what the, how we should even tier teams going forward and how we should look at all these teams right now and who's a contender and who is not. So, like, you and I had, I think it was you and I, maybe Chris as well, had this conversation before the season began. We were joking about, like, who's going to write the first Luka is better than LeBron column. I can't remember if that was on the pod or if it was offline. But let me just throw it to you. Like, is LeBron a top five player right now? And if not, how many players are better than him?
So, it's a really interesting question. And it's a great email, Brian. It's not a hot take. I think you mentioned something really interesting. The Lakers need... LeBron's, I think we can agree, like, maybe the best problem solver in NBA history. He's the chess master, the Bobby Fischer, the way he just game to game, and you especially see it in the postseason, just kind of manipulates the energy of a basketball game to fit his needs on a given night, I think is unparalleled. And I think what the Lakers did this year that we've said from the moment they did their offseason overhaul was they're putting a lot of pressure on LeBron to figure out these problems. They put a lot of pressure on him to figure out, you know, what to do on the nights Anthony Davis doesn't want to start at center. They're putting a lot of pressure on him to figure out what to do with Russell Westbrook. They're putting a lot of pressure on him to figure out what to do with these one-way role players. Now, part of that is his own undoing. I mean, he was apparently holding these free agent meetings in his house, and he wanted to play with Russ, so he has some culpability there in terms of how this roster was put together. Now, in terms of, is LeBron a top five player right now? To answer Brian's question, if you're looking at a guy to take me through the regular season, I think LeBron is right on the edge. I think I'd still take him over Luka, frankly. The problem is that difference between
you would take LeBron over Luka from game one to game 82 if you're trying to position your team as best you can, heading into the playoffs?
I would, and here's why I'll say that. I think if LeBron were on a team that felt built to his strengths, I think the Lakers would be looking a lot different right now. I mean, we saw it last year when they were coming off the bubble and they had this incredibly short turnaround. They started off the season incredibly hot. Now, I understand that the injury thing is now real, and it's impossible to predict it, and you have to imagine he's going to miss, I don't know, 15 games a year. A lot of stars miss that many games. You know, Jimmy Butler's missed a couple games this year. Steph, you know, has missed time in the last couple seasons. Kevin Durant, you know, pre-Achilles, he had the broken foot. Like, it happens to players of his caliber. We're just not used to it happening to him. But it does happen. Even Jokic, who's been an Iron Man, is missing time now. Luka's missed time. So it's going to happen, and so the injuries worry me slightly less. They're worrisome in the fact that we're just not used to it happening to him to this degree. But I just think the problem is the difference between LeBron being one and LeBron being five is a huge difference for the Lakers because this team's not optimized to him. So if LeBron was still that number one, number two guy, then maybe they look a lot better because he's figuring out the problems. He's kind of overwhelming the fit issues. Now, because there is that little bit of decline, he can't necessarily get them over that hump by himself. And I think that's what we're seeing a little bit more so with the Lakers. I still think he's maybe five or six. I'm not ready to put Luka ahead of him. I don't think I'm ready to put Luka ahead of him, for sure. And here's another thing I'll add. To spin Brian's question forward, he might not be a top five regular season guy, but I still think he's in my top five of game seven, who do I want on my team? And I don't think he's number one because I'm thinking back to the playoffs, Mike, and KD, 50 points in that game seven against Milwaukee. Giannis with the 50-point Game 6 Finals closeout. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's not just about scoring what LeBron does, but, I mean, you'll remember his Game 6 in Boston, the Game 6s he had against Indiana, his Game 7 against Boston.
This is years ago.
I know, but my point is, that's the point I'm getting to, is he's had those huge scoring nights in the playoffs, right? And I don't think he can get to that level anymore. So he's not my number one guy I want in a game seven. That worries me a little bit. I would have never said that. I think the first, I don't even know how many years of his career. Like the fact that I don't think that he could have the 50-point game seven like KD did or like Giannis did. And that worries me a little bit about him. But if I'm looking at a guy to control a game seven, I still think I want him maybe even over Jokic, frankly, who I think has a sterling playoff record and is delivered time and time again in elimination games specifically, I still think I want LeBron in that scenario. And that's important.
So, I guess, like, I already mentioned the defense, which just has gone down a notch. You look at many different aspects of his game, ISOs, post-ups, drives, his ability to draw fouls.
Mm-hmm.
All these things are really, you know, they're either the lowest they've been in, you know, 10 years or the lowest they've been in his entire career in terms of volume, in terms of efficiency. And when I watch him play, more than the numbers, because the numbers are, we're just dealing with a very small sample size, still with him. And he's working his way into the season, and he wasn't 100% healthy for some of these games. I understand that. But when you just watch him play, it's really hard to kind of separate what is the physical decline versus what the surroundings are doing to his game. Yeah. Agreed. So it's like LeBron might still have every tool in the toolbox, but like what good are those tools if the house you're working on is in flames? it's just not relevant to what we're talking about. So that's been a little difficult for me to kind of parse, but there are so many possessions still.
Yes. That's where, the biggest reason why I'm not giving up on him, by the way, but continue.
No, like there's still so many possessions where like he just doesn't have the burst. Like he's not getting the step on his man. He's not like, there was a play where he actually scored on, of all players, Beef Stew, he's coming downhill in a pick and roll, and all he can do is like throw his shoulder into Isaiah Stewart in the paint. Like, he can't get around him anymore. That's just not who LeBron is, and he's not making the game. One of the things about LeBron that's been so amazing for the past like 15 years is how he makes basketball, this really fast game that's really complicated and really difficult, he just makes it look so easy. He's not taking shots that make the game look easy, and he's not making plays that set up other teammates everything looks very muddied in a way that it just hasn't for him in a very long time. And maybe I'm being too dramatic here. I don't mean to sound that. I still think he's
one of the best players. You think he's the washed king?
I'm not going to say that, and I don't
title this
that.
Episode hashtag washed king in quotes, Michael Pina.
I'm not going there. Still think he's great, but I do think it's worth talking about. Okay, if LeBron is, I think, like, first of all, this is a sidebar real quick, but like when we rank these players, it sounds kind of reductive for the purpose of can the team that the player is on win the championship. But I kind of disagree with a case like this because of the situation that the Lakers are in, where they just need top three. Like, yes. When they won the title, they had two top three players straight up. So that's why they won the title. And if you don't have that, and all these other teams around the league are more impressive than you are, and the landscape has shifted, and they're not in the bubble, then the dynamic has changed. So if LeBron isn't one of the...
Hashtag Wash King, hashtag Bubble Frauds.
That Mickey Mouse title. This brings me to one of... And I wanted to throw this on you. Mm-hmm. So I hope you're ready for it. This is my, like... I'm trying to not be too hot here with this take. Ooh. But I was just thinking about the Lakers, and I was thinking about the situation that... Like, let's say LeBron, I'm not saying this is going to happen, but let's say LeBron just continues to, average 22-5-5 as opposed to 28-8-8, and his efficiency is down, and he's just launching threes, and he's taking these, like, contested baseline fadeaways, and they're going in, like, 38% of the time. You know what I mean? Like, if this is who he is.
You think they're going to attach him to Russ to get rid of the contract?
You know me very well, but that was not exactly where I was going. Okay, okay. Where I was going is, if you're the Lakers and you kind of are looking at the situation like, okay, we have AD in his prime, and it's a little dramatic to say we'd be wasting a year of AD's prime here, but in the same vein of, we can't, if you're the Sixers, we can't waste Joel Embiid's prime.
We should talk about what they're doing, by the way, but...
Sure, we can in a second, and maybe this all might come together with a galaxy brain take here by me. But if you are the Lakers, like, what do you do to, like, set, like, prevent your present and your future from being just a total dumpster fire? Like, what do you do there? And
no,
so
it's a
my question, real quick. My question is, how do you parse LeBron's trade value? And is there a universe in your eyes that the Lakers actually trade this guy?
It's a great hypothetical, and it's really interesting. I think there's a 0.0000 chance they trade LeBron James. This is the franchise that gave Kobe the sweetheart extension when he was cooked. No offense to Kobe, nor disrespect to his memory, but... when he got that last 2-year deal, I think everyone around the league looked at it as the Lakers taking care of their guy beyond the point where he was a superstar. And that's okay. I'm okay with franchises doing that. Like, people lose sight of those things. Like, I don't think there's anything wrong with it. But, I'm not thinking it's a possibility that they trade him. And I wrote about this when they traded for Russ. They just took such a gamble because LeBron has only got a couple years left. We were all wondering, when is this, going to maybe look like a little, he's declining a little bit, and we're here. They needed to build a team that was the exact opposite of this one. They needed to build a team that was young, that had shooting, that complemented their stars. Instead, they brought in all these old vets and guys like Russ, and they just went the complete opposite way. I don't think there's a universe in which they trade him. I think they have to ride out, you know, Anthony Davis is 28. I think they have to ride that, you know, I think LeBron is, what, 2 years on his deal after this one? I think that they have to accept, okay, AD is going to be 30 when LeBron is maybe retiring, or maybe he wants to go play with his son. Who knows? But, and rebuild from there, reload from there, and they're always going to be an attractive option, and people are going to want to play with AD, etc. But I don't think there's a chance that they trade him. And I'm not saying that just to, like, you know, completely ruin this question, because I think it is interesting, and in a world where, you know, if we were, like, only focused on quote-unquote asset culture, then maybe you'd consider doing something like that. But that's not the reality, and I don't want it to be. But I think the biggest issue is they made was, I wrote this, like, why are you taking such a big gamble when you don't know how many great years he has left? And to me, I'd be more interested in seeing them blow up the rest of this roster. I mean, how do you maybe unload Russ? Do you have to attach Talen Horton Tucker?
You can't. You can't trade him. That's just not going to happen.
As in, you think no team would ever take him?
Russell Westbrook? No, that ship has sailed. But here's the specific hypothetical I want to throw at you, and I also want you to look at this through the lens of, is there also a possibility where LeBron looks at the situation and he's like, I'm trying to win a ring here, and I'm looking at I'm looking around and I have, like, Carmelo Anthony getting hunted on ball screen after ball screen. Malik Monk is getting cooked by Frank Jackson. I don't know if you watched the game. I watched just the entire Pistons game. Frank Jackson is just cooking Malik Monk off the bounce.
Are just running by every single Lakers perimeter defender, like free run to the rim.
I mean, it was a situation where when Isaiah Stewart and LeBron went out, I think I texted you this, or I forget who I texted this to, but it was like the Pistons losing Stewart was more costly than the Lakers losing LeBron.
Yes, I mean, the Pistons had no size. They had no one for AD down the stretch. Yes, I agree.
So here's my little hypothetical for you that I've been pseudo-teasing for a minute now. The Los Angeles Lakers trade LeBron James to the Philadelphia 76ers for Ben Simmons, Tyrese Maxey, and Matisse Thybulle. What happens?
Who says Simmons, Thybulle, and Maxey?
Do you need a cigarette?
That is a good one, Mike. That is a good one. The Lakers say no. The Lakers say no. Definitely. But they should think about it more than they would.
Can I ask you why, like if you're the Lakers though, like, I'm just going to sell it from the Lakers' point of view real quick. Mm-hmm. We have LeBron, we have Westbrook. This was a colossal mistake. We're not going to win the title. Let's get a guy who's 10 years younger, or however many years younger, even more years younger than 12 years younger than LeBron, Ben Simmons. Let's rehabilitate him in LA. He'll be happier, presumably. He gets to play with Anthony Davis, who is a wonderful fit, or a better fit than Embiid with the style of basketball they play. Maybe the jump shot eventually comes around. The defense goes up a level. They need better perimeter defenders on that team. And you kind of look ahead to the future and you just think, in the post-Russ world, we'll have Maxey looks like, I don't even, like, Tyrese Maxey just looks Maxey's incredible. Good. Yeah, Maxey's going to be, like, really
good. He's getting one of those junk stats. That, like, he's one of only six NBA players in history to average blank, blank, and blank after 6 p.m. on Tuesday nights. Like, he's one of those
he's good. He's legit. So, like, just in a pure value proposition, like, it's talking basketball strictly, not
yes,
talking
now,
business.
Here's why I still think they say no. Here's why I still think they say no.
Okay.
Because the Russ elephant is still there. And that's, to me, their biggest problem. You can't play Russ. I mean, they already have a shooting problem. You cannot play Simmons and Russ together. Also, you know they're going to trot out a lineup of Russ, Simmons, like Mello, or not DeAndre Mello.
Jordan.
Yeah, DeAndre Jordan. Like, that's going to be absolutely heinous. That's going to be an affront to basketball. They're going to look like, I don't know, like the 85 Rockets out there or something. Some team that had just way too many bigs. I mean, that's why I don't think they do it, because I understand about maybe trying to retool toward the future, but to me, any move like that involves getting off Russ. That, to me, is a bigger issue, because you're just saddled with his contract, and it's like an anchor that brings down even... That's the thing. That's the real problem with that Westbrook contract, is even if you want to go get someone like Ben Simmons, you cannot, because unless you're willing to just bench him, literally park him like the Rockets are doing with John Wall... How do you make it work? Do you bring Simmons off the bench? Do you bring Westbrook off the bench? Who's going to be happy with that setup? So that's why I don't think it works. I do think it would be interesting to see a Simmons-Davis front court if Davis committed to playing center and Simmons committed to playing power forward and not point guard. That could be a really interesting, fun team. Maybe it's something that they visit in 2 years or after the season, once there's more clarity on Simmons' situation and they know maybe what LeBron's kind of end of career plans are. But I don't see it happening right now, because that Russ thing is just sitting there like the elephant in the room.
I mean,
I think that's what prevents it.
Like, the Russ thing is, he's got $44 million due this year. He's got a $47 million player option next year. And like, I could see next year there being some kind of buyout situation, or a, hey, just so you know, like, we cannot play you with Ben Simmons. So if you want to win the championship, maybe you should take this buyout and go sign with like KD and Harden or something in Brooklyn. Like, you know what I mean? Like, so I don't know. I'm just throwing out like a, it's like kind of a, like a fantasy land type of,
for sure,
fake trade there. But
it's interesting. I like the idea of Simmons and Maxey on the Lakers, and I think LeBron. I thought LeBron should have seriously considered the Sixers the year he signed with the Lakers. That would have been an incredibly intriguing option. I think Rich Paul maybe had a phone call with them. I don't think he was ever really seriously considering it, to be honest. But I think he should have considered signing there that summer. Here, can I say something about the Sixers real quick?
Sure.
I mean, when Embiid was healthy, they were one of the best teams in the league this season. Granted, it was early. Maxey, you mentioned, has been playing incredibly well. I'm going to talk about wasting time. The undercurrent of this whole Ben Simmons saga is, you know, Morey is being like, we'll wait 4 years if we have to. Listen, I understand management not wanting to cave, set precedents, etc., and Morey's getting celebrated. Why are you wasting time with Joel Embiid? I keep saying this. Like, you are, if now the Sixers are so intent on proving a point, on winning a power struggle, that I think that they are not realizing that they could win a title this year if they get the right pieces around Embiid. I don't think Embiid is like a traditional superstar, Mike. I don't. I don't think you need a second, you know, I mean, you saw the Giannis do it with the Bucks. Like, Chris Middleton is not... Where did he end up falling in our top 100 in the 20s?
Whoa. I can't have you besmirching Chris Middleton.
I'm not besmirching Chris Middleton. I'm saying they're very good players, but they're not top 10 superstars, super team. No one was calling the Bucks a super team when they got those guys, or when they got Jrue Holiday. There was like, this is a great team, but it's not a super team. My point is that you don't need to do, you know, the way Morey has gone star hunting in the past. I don't think that's what you need to do when you have someone like Embiid, who is just such a matchup problem for every team in the league. It's a lot different building around someone like him. And the fact that they're willing to wait it out for 4 years, like they said, or whatever, to me, is stupid. Because you have a guy that I think can go get you the title. I know that you're like a Sixers hater and you refuse to believe, you know, Embiid could do it. But I thought they could have won the title last year if they had someone who was willing to shoot in the fourth quarters as opposed to Simmons. So...
Look, yeah, I think that Embiid is terrific. I think
it's really convincing.
Comparing him, You're essentially comparing him to Giannis, though, right? Giannis, two-time MVP, heading into the year that he won the championship.
I am comparing him to Giannis. I think, frankly, I think that on their most talented days, I would on their best days, I think Embiid is right there with him.
Okay, that's a fair enough opinion. I disagree with it slightly. Okay, can we put a little put a button on this LeBron discussion here? I guess, like, are we concern trolling here too much?
No, it's a team that we had concerns about heading into the season, and it's just borne out. This was a great defensive team. What happened to their defense? They brought in players who can't play it.
The Chicago Bulls. That's what happened to their defense.
Yeah. Letting Caruso walk was absurd. Do we really think Trevor Ariza and Kendrick Nunn are going to turn this around? They look old. Like I said, I still think LeBron in a game seven, he's one of the three guys in the world I want. So I'm not saying that they can't win, but like we said, the landscape in the NBA is just a little different right now. There, frankly, is a lot more parity in the league. I mean, could you see them beating the Warriors in a playoff series? I mean, there's no chance. The way the Golden State's offense is. I mean, you wrote about it, how Golden State's offense looks like it's old offense.
These two teams are on a different planet. They're on a different, like, so I don't, in a different solar system.
I'm not saying that they can't win. It's still early, but they need to make significant changes to what we've seen them do so far. And what those changes are, where they're going to come from, that remains to be seen. But if they're running the same strategy and lineups that they are now, they're not winning anything.
Yes, I agree. The offense is really tough to watch, honestly, even when LeBron is on the floor.
Go back and check the tape, because I said this in our preseason mega preview pod with Beck and Herring and Mannix. I said then I wouldn't be shocked if this team went out in the first round, because I was that nervous about how they were constructed. So I just want to say, we've been on this.
Of course, absolutely. Okay, so I think we can move on from this year. I just think that it is a fascinating. We're going to be checking in again on LeBron, I would assume, throughout the season, because he's LeBron and he has the utmost. He deserves the utmost benefit of the doubt. But just when you watch him play and you look at some of the numbers, it's a cause for concern. And this team is not built to, like, the whole thing about getting Westbrook. Mm-hmm. Was that Westbrook could alleviate some of the strain from LeBron and his load. And that's just it's just not going to work out like that. That's just not possible, I guess. If you just watch this team play basketball, it's just that's just not going to happen. So they have a lot of problems. I know Frank Vogel said that Pistons win last night could have been a turning point. I vehemently disagree, unless that's when he decided that DeAndre Jordan is going to have to get cut and
start Dwight Howard if you must start a center. Don't get me started, but
okay, let's move on then.
Yeah, please.
Let's talk about Luke Walton. Speaking of the Lakers, old Lakers head coach Luke Walton was fired by the Sacramento Kings after three seasons there on Sunday afternoon. Just real quick, Rohan, what was your reaction to that news when you first heard it?
Just classic nonsensical Kings. I'm not saying that Luke Walton deserved to keep his job based on their performance, based on the Kings' performance this season. But you could have said that after last season. Why did you even go into the season with Luke Walton as the coach if the hook was going to be this quick or the expectations were so high? What did he prove to you the last couple years that he was going to turn this around? So there's that. There's the idea that I don't know that their expectations match the roster that they've built. To me, fighting for the plane is around where I expect them. What does management think? And
do you think that this team was going to get to the play-in and then be competitive in the play-in? Is that the vibe you were getting from watching
them? I thought maybe if Fox kind of continued on the trajectory he was from last year and kind of took another step up, you know, Halliburton takes a step up.
Neither of those things have happened.
Exactly. And I do think that there is some stuff that, you know, the sample sizes are getting bigger. I do think there's some stuff between them that'll kind of level out a little bit. So, yeah, I just, to me, the Kings, it's like, why didn't you do this in the offseason when people kind of already had questions about Luke Walton? You did write, I believe you wrote about this, and I saw you tweet about this, and it was funny to me because under Dave Yeager, the Kings played really fast, and that last season under Dave Yeager, and that's another thing, their last year under Dave Yeager, they were great. That was the most exciting Kings season of the last 15 years.
Finished ninth in the Western Conference.
And they fired Dave Yeager, which was a terrible move. Also, get well soon, Dave Yeager.
Yes.
And they get rid of him, and now they bring in Walton. He grinds the team to a halt, weirdly, which made no sense because his Lakers team played fast, and I thought, oh, this is good. He had a young Lakers team, and they played fast, etc. He's going to do that with the Kings. That's not what happened. And to me, it's like, yeah, it's the same old story with the Kings. It's like, it just doesn't matter what you do because from top down, you're a mess. And I'm nonplussed. Like, this isn't going to move the needle for me.
Okay, so I want to say a few things, then I have a question for you about the future of this team. Number one, like, it's hard to blame. I don't think Luke Walton is necessarily a great head coach. I'll just throw that out there. Like, I know that his players haven't been superb in LA and in Sacramento, but his teams just haven't performed very well, and it's really difficult to kind of identify any sort of on-court personality with what he's thinking and how he wants his teams to play. And so, you know, you mentioned the pace thing, and it's like he comes on board, he wants to slow things down despite having one of the fastest players in the history of the league, who is great because he is just a speed demon in the open floor. Mm-hmm. So we're going to slow things up and we're going to focus on the defense. Okay, a year later, we have the second worst defense in the league, one of the worst defenses in NBA history. And I know there's like a lot of weird stuff that has happened over the past couple seasons, so to be fair there. So I'll just say that about Luke Walton. The other thing is, like, it's really hard to blame a head coach for everything that Vlade Divac did during his reign in the front office. We literally don't have time to go through it, but the big thing that stands out today and just that hovers over this team is Marvin Bagley, who was selected second overall when you could have had Luka. You could have had, I know you had Fox on the roster, sure. Could have had Trae Young. Could have had Jaren Jackson Jr. Could have had Michael Porter Jr. Could have Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who I know wasn't necessarily, that would have been a wild thing to do. I know that, but you could have traded down. You could, this is taking Marvin Bagley over Luka, I guess, period, point blank, was just a mistake. That's all we really need to say about that.
And I like Marvin Bagley. That's another thing, because I do think Marvin Bagley could be good. But you know what that's helping is the way the Kings have handled him.
No, it's been a total disaster in this season. You just watch him play. His confidence is completely gone. He's averaging like 3.8 points per game. He was out of the rotation at the start. It was a whole
disaster.
Statement
Absolute
made by
disaster.
His agent. So that's been just terrible. Then you go, Monty McNair decides not to match Bogdan Bogdanovich's offer sheet. He goes to Atlanta. You know, he's one of the reasons that the Atlanta Hawks go to the conference finals. He's one of the best three-point shooters
in the league.
And they
were having success with the Hield Bogdanovich-Fox trio. They played well together.
It was weird. It's one of those situations where in the moment it's like, okay, why would you do that? You could have matched it, and then you could have just traded Bogdan instead of losing him for nothing. It was just like, yeah, we can't. So that's not Luke Walton's fault that you lose a key rotation player like that. And right now they're like 27th or something in three-point percentage. Buddy Hield's coming off the bench. Buddy Hield's one of the best three-point shooters in the NBA. So, yeah. So I just, a lot of what is happening there now is not Luke Walton's fault necessarily, even though I don't think he's a good coach. But going forward, my question to you is, what do they do with De'Aaron Fox? Like, what is the strategy here for this team in the long term? Like, is he the franchise point guard? Jonathan Sharks wrote about this on The Ringer, and I wrote about this on SI.com. But it's like, He's one of those, like, I say this about Sabonis a lot, and I no disrespect to Sabonis, but like low tier all-star. Yeah. That can't be your best player if you want to do anything of significance in the league. So you have Halliburton, you have Davion Mitchell. These are really talented players who seemingly play the same position and want the ball in their hands eventually. De'Aaron Fox obviously wants the ball. Not a very good outside shooter. Needs the ball. So, like, I don't know what you're doing here, frankly. And is it time to, like, do the teardown? That is so frustrating for Kings fans. I can't even imagine. This team hasn't been in the playoffs in, what, 15 years?
At least they got Lady Bird, you know?
Sure, exactly, yes. Just shout out to Dave. So, like, I don't know. What do they do? Do they trade Fox?
I think they got to tear it down. What is happening? I honestly think they got to trade Fox. And I don't say that as a diss to De'Aaron Fox, who I love, who I think can be really good on a good team. He's just not in a situation to succeed, I think, in Sacramento. Like, I think there's going to be mutually beneficial, because I do think they need to blow it up and they need to figure out what's at least have some semblance of a plan. Like you said, the Luka thing just set them back. And that's the kind of thing that happens. Like, you make the wrong decision. You've now set your franchise back. You have to deal with the consequences. I understand why they're desperate for a play-in berth and why that would be so important to them. But I just don't think it's going to get them anywhere at this point. Like, even if they were someone to make it in, they're not going to turn into the Suns. Like, a star is not going to want to go there because they made the play-in. I just don't think they have the infrastructure for that, even though I do think Alvin Gentry is liked around the league. I do think it's time for them to blow it up, and I, like I said, it sucks for Kings fans. It's terrible that they're going to have to go play the lottery game, which they've been playing this entire time for a decade and a half, but to me, they're just a team that really needs to bottom out and just figure this out from the ground up. Like, at least try to become the Knicks, even, where you have a bunch of capable people, and maybe you're in Julius Randle, who's at the high end of the low-tier all-stars, but at least you have a team that's competitive every night. But to me, like, this is just so depressing that I'm just, like, throwing my hands up at it. Like, whatever, yeah, blow it up. Like, trade Fox. Like, you know, I'm sure you could get a really good haul back for him. I'm sure you could get pieces back for Hield. I'm sure you could get pieces back for Barnes, maybe even Bagley. Like, yeah, to me, this is, it's just not going anywhere. It's presently constructed. It's not. And maybe they go on a little run with Gentry here. Who knows? Maybe it has, like, the Nate McMillan effect on them. I'd be shocked. And I love Alvin Gentry. I mean, I would hope it happens for him. But, I mean, if it doesn't, then, yeah, I my vote is blow it up.
I just want them to play fast. I know that they're kind of playing a little bit of a faster pace this season. Just be first. Be the fastest team in the league. Yes, who cares? Just let that be your identity. And yeah. I don't think you're going to win. You weren't going to win anyway. I'm sorry. You're very small. You don't rebound. That's just what this team is. And I think that if you have Halliburton and you have Mitchell, it really makes it a lot easier to swallow a deal that would seemingly set you back a little bit. So, you know, trade it, like, you know, it's like I'm looking around at teams that could use De'Aaron Fox, and it's really difficult to even find a trading partner, frankly. So I don't know where you go there. Like, is it Jeremy Grant and Killian Hayes in a pick? Like, I don't.
Duncan Robinson, I don't know.
Dude, you don't stop. Stop. That's a terrible fit. You know it. Stop. Don't get greedy. Okay. Marcus Smart.
Kyle Lowry needs a backup. He can't be playing all these minutes forever.
Oh, geez. Okay. We're gonna close here. I said at the top we were gonna talk a little Celtics, so maybe, a man of my word.
Maybe De'Aaron Fox goes to Philly, Jaylen Brown goes to Sacramento, and Simmons goes to Boston in a three teamer.
Are you trying to end the podcast now and have this be your last episode? Is that what you're trying to do?
Sure. I could go eat lunch.
Okay, so we have this email coming in from Anthony, who writes, "Hello, Open Floor team from Queensland, Australia. I haven't been listening as long as most, but it has easily become my favorite. Michael, Chris, and Rohan." See, just a quick aside, that's how they're always ordered. It's always me first. Sorry, Rohan. "Michael, Chris, and Rohan are so genuine and hilarious. I always have a smile on my face while listening. Plus, the basketball knowledge and insights you share are fantastic. Anyways, on to the question. I would love to get your thoughts on Dennis Schroeder. Once the quote "dropped the bag" memes died down, it seems no one is talking about him. Any and all thoughts are appreciated. Look forward to the next one. Okay, so Dennis Schroeder is averaging...
Pretty open-ended question there.
Dennis Schroeder is averaging 21 points, 5 assists, and 4 rebounds per game in 11 games as a starter. The Celtics starting lineup since Jaylen Brown went out and Rob Williams went out of Horford, Schroeder, Grant Williams, Marcus Smart, and Jason Tatum is just absolutely obliterating the league. I think that, you know, it's not often that we take a question on a player who is kind of as obscure as Dennis Schroeder, and Rohan, you are nodding your head to those listening along, but he's been playing great basketball and he's really helped turn around a season that was going nowhere, frankly. And you watch him play, you know, I know that the Lakers defense and the Thunder defense are not anything to write home about. And tonight, the Celtics play the Rockets, also an atrocious defense. And I anticipate Schroeder will have another big game. But he just looks really good. And this was a reminder from the offseason of just how undervalued he was with the contract they got and how much of a steal it was. And he's a starting caliber point guard. And he's still super fast, still got a crazy fast first step, and it's been fun to watch him.
Mike, the irony of this is these are all things I told you. Like, I remember texting you when Marcus Smart on opening night hit the game-tying three against the Knicks, and I was like, I'd rather have Schroeder taking that shot. And you were like,
I stand by that.
I like Schroeder. I told you I thought he should be a starter. You told me they were definitely going to bring him off the bench. I like Schroeder. I thought it was a home run signing, no question. I understand that the team was a little obscure. He was fantastic his last season in Oklahoma City. Like, he could have easily won Sixth Man of the Year that year. Those three-guard lineups with Shea, Chris Paul, Dennis Schroeder killed teams. If anything, Billy Donovan didn't play that lineup enough because the Thunder weren't sure if they wanted to be good for a while. I think he's always been a really valuable player. The Lakers thing, somehow he's become like the scapegoat for a season that was just kind of decimated with injuries. And I understand you want him to step up more in the playoffs, etc., but you're asking him to take on...
He also had COVID. He had COVID.
Yeah, and you're asking him to take on a completely different role than he anticipated in that first-round series, etc. I think he's a really, really good player. It's not surprising to me. I've been on the Schroeder train. Like, I've been pushing this. Like, I think he's really good. I think he should have started for them for day one. It didn't make sense to me that he didn't.
May I ask you a question then?
Sure.
So when Jaylen Brown and Rob Williams are healthy, is Dennis Schroeder still starting, or is he going to the
bench? I think he's got
to
start, and I think you got to move Marcus Smart to the bench.
Okay.
I'd bring Smart and Rob off the bench. I like the Grant Williams for front court. I like the spacing against
The Celtics are outscoring opponents by 8 points per 100 possessions with Marcus Smart on the floor, and they're getting outscored by 12 points per 100 possessions when Marcus Smart is on the bench. So you want to take this player who is the heart and soul of the Celtics, and you want to cut his minutes? Is that what you want to do?
You don't have to cut his minutes. Not every bench player gets their minutes cut. I mean, what's Tyler Hero's minutes per game at? He's at like 36 or something. He's a sixth man. Make Marcus Smart your sixth man. If anything, I'm helping the Celtics win more games, because what usually happens when teams go to their bench, Mike? Unless you're the New York Knicks, usually when your team goes to the bench, you start playing worse. But if you're bringing the heart and soul of your team off the bench and you're so good with him on the floor, because clearly he's the reason for that huge on-off differential, it's all Marcus Smart.
Absolutely.
You bring him 100% off the bench, now all of a sudden he's anchoring bench lineups, and boom, you have two great units. You have the Marcus Smart-led bench unit, and then you have the Tatum, Brown, Schroeder-led starters, and they should all be thriving. I'm being serious, though. Like, I think it makes a lot of sense to bring Smart. You're not going to bring Brown off the bench. And I think Schroeder's a better point guard than Marcus Smart. He might not be a better player, but I think he's a better point guard. I think he can play better off the guys on the floor in the starting lineup than Smart can. You can run pick and rolls, etc. So to me, it's not.
I think it's an interesting conversation. I would rather have Marcus Smart's defense on the floor to start the basketball.
It's pretty cut and dry for us outside of the Democratic People's Republic of Boston. you know,
and stay out. And
I know that General Smart has won a lot of battles for you guys, and you're singing songs about him. But it's pretty cut and dry for those of us who live in the real world that bringing Smart off the bench would not be a big deal. That's what I would do, and then I say that. But you know, I've always liked Schroeder, so I know you have your finger on the pulse there. But to me, it's like it's a no-brainer. I'd Smart, Schroeder, Brown, Tatum. I think Grant Williams, I know the three-point shooting has cooled off, but I just like the defensive look of him and Horford together than Williams and Horford together, even though they're both good defenders. Or you start Williams and bring Horford off the bench.
But, okay, just we gotta wrap this up. It's getting into some territory that's just absolutely ridiculous.
Why?
Al Horford's one of the best players on the team. What are they gonna move him to the bench? What are you talking about?
Bro, you can only start five guys in a basketball game, Mike.
I know.
Tell me your answer, because clearly you know the right answer. What is it then?
Yes, I do. Yeah.
Okay. What's their starting five?
You move Schroeder to the bench. Smart, Tatum, Jalen, Horford, and Rob Williams. That's the starting five. That is impeccable defense.
The starting five that was just meh to start the season.
Yeah, for like two games. All right. We got to wrap this episode up. I'm sorry.
You just came in. No. Because you come in here and you're just like, here's all this info about how great Dennis Schroeder is and how well the Celtics have been playing. And you're like, you know what? Yes. Forget all that. Let's go right back to literally where they started.
I don't think that you're like, take
that information I just gave you, throw it out the window, and let's go back to night one.
I don't think that coming off the bench is a punishment, okay? I think that that's just his better role for the team.
Apparently it was for Marcus Smart.
It just doesn't make sense to bring Marcus. It's not that type of player. It's not like he's not independent offense. Dennis Schroeder can get a shot whenever he wants. He doesn't need...
I'm just saying
one basketball, and Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum on the court need their shots. So what is Dennis Schroeder doing besides getting cooked on defense?
Listen, they have found something that works, and you want to break it up, so that's fine. Okay, do you?
Okay. I think that is a wonderful place for this all-time episode to end. Rohan, thank you. Thank you so much to our listeners. Everyone, please keep the emails coming. Openfloormail@gmail.com. That's openfloormail@gmail.com. Everyone, please stay safe. Everyone, please continue to enjoy the NBA season. And have a happy Thanksgiving as well. Whoa.